Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, November 12th, 2021, Section A. Mayor urges support for industry. By Mella McEwen. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton is quick to acknowledge that he has never worked a day of his life in the oil and gas industry, but he told those attending the Petroleum Museum's Brown Bag Lunch and Lecture Series on Thursday, "As soon as he was elected mayor and began traveling in that post, I began seeing what was happening to the industry." His speech came a day after a group of U.S. senators wrote President Biden asking him to consider a ban on crude exports, which had just been lifted 6 years ago after being in place for 40 years. The development had him shaking his head. Not only have his travels shown him how the industry is being affected by anti-fossil fuel fervor, but how we got to the place where we are today. I'm a bit taken aback by how our industry has allowed the narrative to be framed around it for 30 or 40 years to where they don't defend it. He offered what he called three realities, four problems, two glaring failures, and two possible actions to support the region's oil and gas industry. Three realities. The first reality he offered was the nation's successful growth is due to the oil and gas industry. We have a nation, the growth we have, the business we have, the success we have because of the oil and gas industry that we have here and in Europe. The second reality is that the oil and gas industry has led to human thriving. He said he reminded someone during a recent visit to D.C. that the products contained in the ventilators so desperately needed at the height of COVID-19 pandemic were byproducts of the oil and gas industry. The third reality is that developing countries will not have the ability to advance their populations and grow their economies without the industry. Four challenges. After 30 or 40 years of allowing the narrative to be framed around it, he said the industry finds itself in the crosshairs of a narrative that has painted it as evil, that has led to misunderstandings that have led to significant changes for the industry. First is the pervasive belief in abundant renewable fuels and that the nation can just flip a switch from fossil fuels to alternative fuels. Second is the belief that all oil and gas does is provide gasoline for vehicles. Third is the belief that behind those electrical sockets on the wall, electricity just exists. The fourth and most serious challenge, he said, is that many people under the age of 30 don't believe Russia doesn't have America's best interests at heart, that China doesn't have America's best interests at heart, that Saudi Arabia doesn't have America's best interests at heart, that they will truly cooperate with the U.S. on environmental commitments. Two failures. The industry's commitment to just getting up, going to work, doing their job, and going home to take care of the kids has led to what we call two failures. One was to minimize the commitment of radicals who, he said, commit to one notion their entire lives. Here we are today with public companies trying to figure out how to file ESG reports in the hopes Wall Street won't cut them off because that framing has worked. Blame lies at the feet of what he called C-suites and boardrooms at oil and gas companies for allowing that framing to take hold and not pushing back against those who are destroying the industry that gave us our way of life and human thriving. To combat this negative framing, he urged the audience to become more informed about the issues and to call and write their elected representatives in support of the industry and to recruit others to do the same and to work to dispel some of that negative framing. You do not have to be as scientific as you think you need to be to support the industry. For his part, he is helping establish a coalition of what he calls Energy City Mayors from around Texas and other producing states to reframe the industry in a more positive light, not only to the public, but to the elected officials. County Judge to Run for Re-Election by Caitlin Randall. Midland County Judge Terry Johnson has announced he will be running for re-election in 2022. Johnson, president of TCO Field Services and founder of nonprofit Show of Support, was elected for his first term in 2018. He won in a Republican primary runoff against James Beauchamp, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance. Johnson said in an email that the accomplishments he's most proud of as county judge are the road improvement projects that have been completed and fostering relationships with the city and sheriff's office. If I'm reelected, I will continue moving forward with the county road projects. I will continue my support of the Sheriff's Department, and I'll look forward to doing more projects in tandem with the city to benefit all the residents of Midland. Johnson added that his approach to being county judge has been to bring a business mindset to the job, which oversees about 800 employees and a $200 million annual budget. He also said that he believes he's kept the promises made during his first campaign. One of the platforms Johnson prioritized during his campaign was stopping wasteful spending at the Horseshoe Complex. The event center is owned by the county but managed by a hospitality company. As a native Midlander, I want to continue to do everything in my power to keep Midland great. We have a very unique community with untold potential and ability. I look forward to playing a role in achieving all that is possible for the citizens of Midland. Johnson will be running against Jonna Smoot, vice president of West Texas National Bank, in the Republican primary. The primaries will take place in spring 2022, and the general election will follow in November. Filing to run in the upcoming election will begin on Monday. Blong says she cannot support Nueva Vista plan. By Stuart Doreen. District 4 City Councilwoman Lori Blong stated this week that with the information she currently possesses, she will not be able to support the items related to the Nueva Vista development. The Midland City Council is scheduled to meet on Tuesday to discuss and vote on zone change and preliminary plat for the area in Northwest Midland. A planned development site provided by the city shows the development will include 55 zero-lot-line garden homes, 180 townhomes, 134 single-family of three homes, 147 single-family of two homes, and 110 single-family of one home. That is 626 homes on around 100 acres. The site plan also shows the amenity center and 76.3 acres of green space, typically in areas on the outside of the development, to provide a buffer between it and the neighboring developments like Grasslands Estates and Grasslands West Estates. Long is the representative of the district where the current Nueva Vista development resides. She said during a July meeting when annexation and an initial zone change were approved that she had significant concerns and did not support what she had seen at that point. She stated the following in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. I fundamentally support a property owner's right to buy, sell, develop, and utilize their property. My voting record demonstrates that I make decisions to support property owners' rights, and I do not deviate from that stance with this issue. It is the owner's right to have a legal use of his property without undue interference from government. In addition to supporting property owner rights, I also believe that it is the responsibility of the City Council to uphold the ordinances and laws which govern our community. The plan being brought to the council on Tuesday for the Nueva Golf Course causes me three main concerns, each of which lead me to say I will vote against the proposition, PD, Plan Development, District Zone Change, and the related preliminary plat. Drainage. The developer has not submitted a drainage plan. The Nueva Vista drainage basins serve as the main runoff solution, feeding into Jowl Draw from the west. These drainage basins actually receive runoff from much of the development south of 191, in addition to the areas directly bordering the existing golf course. The regional drainage was last formally studied in 1996. Since that time, we've seen massive development of roads, businesses, and housing developments all over the western region of Midland. We know that flooding already occurs and that the addition of a housing development of the magnitude being proposed will exacerbate an already concerning drainage issue. Due to the concerns about flooding, I believe the developers should submit a drainage plan that adequately addresses these concerns. Traffic planning. The main ingress and egress points to the proposed development are inadequate for the proposed density of the site plan. I have great concern about the traffic flow and patterns for existing residences and businesses, not to mention all the additional population density being proposed within the existing golf course. The city staff's recommendation is to deny the proposed zone change and preliminary plat on this basis. Add in the future planning for Wadley as a main thoroughfare through to State Highway 158, and I believe the proposed traffic management is inadequate. Home type. The proposed PD, Plan Development District, zone change calls for incorporating a garden home type, into the development. This type of home is not an existing option within our city zoning ordinance. If it is to become a new style of home allowable in Midland, the garden home concept should go through the appropriate process to be added to our zoning ordinance, not to be implemented for the first time via a planned development district zone change for a large-scale development. Shakespeare Festival returns to the Globe by J.C. Lewis. Odessa Arts, Odessa College, and the Texas Shakespeare Festival have announced the return of in-person performances for the Odessa Shakespeare Festival. The festival will kick off Monday through November 19th with school performances of As You Like It and Twelfth Night. More than 1,000 students from across the Permian Basin will be able to experience live theater by professional actors on the replica of Shakespeare's Globe. Director Randy Hamm stated, "The Texas Shakespeare Festival travels across East Texas during the fall performing in schools, but closes the season with a week-long residency at the Globe. Public performances will be at 7 p.m. November 19th for Twelfth Night and 7 p.m. on November 20th for As You Like It. Tickets are $10 for adults and $5 for students. Odessa College faculty, staff, and students are free for public performances with ID. Tickets can be purchased at odessashakespeare.org. The roadshow will conduct several acting workshops as well. AFP celebrates Philanthropy Award honorees by J.C. Lewis. The Association of Fundraising Professionals honored members of the Midland and Permian Basin community during Thursday's luncheon for National Philanthropy Day at the Petroleum Club of Midland. The Outstanding Philanthropist Award was presented to a person who has a long track record of supporting and revitalizing the Permian Basin. Jeff Salahi has been a large part of the Trinity School, Midland Memorial Hospital, Bynum and Hillcrest Schools, High Sky, Mark, and Manor Park, to name a few. Salahi is a true philanthropist in that he has established a family foundation that will perpetuate his philanthropy and help many future recipients through his generosity. Other awards included Outstanding Philanthropic Family to two families, Carmen and Billy Bryant and Sandra and Toby Eoff. The Bryants are involved in many organizations in the Permian Basin, and you can see their true heart for making the place we live better. Carmen once said, "I really feel like just the nonprofit sector is so important, and that is just what I love to be involved in." The Eoffs are also involved all over the Permian Basin and most recently working to revitalize downtown Odessa. The Outstanding Philanthropic Foundation Award was awarded to the Yarborough Foundation, which was created in 2002 by William Black Dub Yarborough to continue his legacy and to help all generations navigate through life. The foundation collaborates and helps area nonprofits be successful in what they do best. To date, the foundation has given away almost $7 million in grants. The Outstanding Philanthropic Business was awarded to Community National Bank. Community National Bank and their employees are making a huge impact on many lives in the Permian Basin. In the last 18 months, they have supported the Aphasia Center of West Texas, Boys and Girls Club, Bush Tennis Center, Mission Agape, Safe Place, and Senior Life, to name a few. This year's outstanding philanthropic organization was presented to the Permian Basin Permian Strategic Partnership. The mission of the PSP is to strengthen and improve the quality of life for Permian Basin residents by partnering with local leaders to develop and implement strategic plans that foster superior schools, safer roads, quality health care, and affordable housing, and a trained workforce. The companies involved with the PSP will bring people, expertise, resources, and leadership to develop solutions in partnership with local leaders and communities. The outstanding volunteer fundraiser was presented to Chad Cooksey. The success of achieving the capital fundraising goal of $22.5 million was greatly accredited to the leadership of Safe Place Board Chair Chad Cooksey. Through the strategic planning process, the Safe Place Board identified the limitations of aging facilities and envisioned the opportunities to expand services in creating a new Safe Place campus. Cooksey joined the board of Safe Place in 2014 and was immediately enthralled with the challenge of embarking on the ambitious capital goal. The Outstanding Fundraising Professional Award was presented to Melanie Says, the Outstanding Fundraising Professional, who has shared her expertise for more than 20 years with multiple organizations in Midland. The Outstanding Media Award was presented to the Basin PBS. The mission of Mason PBS is to see that telecommunication and broadcast media are used to advance education, culture, and community throughout the Permian Basin. Safe Place of Permian Basin to Rebuild Local Campus by J.C. Lewis. Safe Place of the Permian Basin held a groundbreaking for a new facility last week. Safe Place has served for more than 44 years in 15 counties. Services are free of charge and include a 24-hour hotline, emergency shelter, licensed counseling, and advocacy for victims and their children. The organization began a rebuild capital campaign in 2012 when the board of directors identified the need to expand programming and facilities in their strategic planning, according to a press release. In 2013, a feasibility study was completed to better define the scope of the proposed project and determine the input and response from donors and constituents. In 2015, 10 acres of land by Andrews Highway was purchased from Hospice of Midland as the future building site for the Midland campus. At this time, Safe Place began the planning process by recruiting campaign leadership, developing a master plan, and continuing the programming and the envisioned new facilities. The capital campaign was launched in September of 2018 with an original project estimate of $26 million. In the fall of 2019, after listening to feedback from donors and with careful consideration, Safe Place Capital Committee and the Board of Directors decided to restructure the capital campaign into two phases. The board prioritized the most critical components of the project and determined that splitting the project into two phases was a more strategic and realistic approach to successfully reach the goal. Phase one will include the emergency shelter, children's facilities, and the non-residential counseling and advocacy programs. Phase two will include the wellness center, administrative and community outreach building, and additional child care areas. Phase one represents a revised capital budget of $22.5 million. The capital fundraising campaign exceeded the organization's goal in July of 2020 in the midst of the pandemic and ultimately raised $22.8 million toward Phase 1. The new Safe Place campus is designed by Rottenberry Well and Architects of Midland. The campus includes seven buildings with a total square footage of 40,000 square feet. All buildings are one-story structures with focus on security, confidentiality, accessibility, and flexibility. The contractor for the project will be Cooper Construction of Midland. Construction is projected to conclude in June 2023. The site at 4629 Andrews Highway is expected to be ready for occupancy by September of 2023. Democrats show true colors with export ban letter. There are a few times when I actually do a double take when seeing news these days, but when I saw Democrats were putting pressure on President Biden to ban oil exports, that's exactly what happened. I don't like the all-out assault on the oil industry in the Permian Basin. It is the political left at its worst, and judging by the lack of response from local Democrats, they are excited by this overreach, this opportunity to not let a good crisis go to waste. They probably forget, or just don't care, that it was President Obama that signed a bill from a Republican Congress to put an end to the export ban 6 years ago. It was just as Bloomberg reported Wednesday. It was only 6 years ago that Congress lifted a 40-year-old ban on U.S. oil exports, reshaping global crude flows, shifting geopolitical power, and disrupting entire economies. The U.S. has emerged as the world's largest oil producer, and its crude has reached more than 50 countries, with shipments often surpassing those of any OPEC nation aside from Saudi Arabia. Backtracking now would almost certainly make the country's flagship West Texas Intermediate crude cheaper, but it would also hurt shale drillers as they recover from last year's unprecedented market crash. Meanwhile, refiners on the Gulf Coast that depend on imported oil might end up paying more for those foreign barrels in a global market deprived from U.S. supplies. As one analyst is quoted in the article, if you block crude and cause an artificial drop in the WTI price, you probably hurt the driller more than you help the driver. I can't help but go back to the debate and think about Biden's comment about transitioning away from the oil industry. The political left in our area didn't challenge their party then, and I can't expect they will do it now. Good luck winning any race statewide with the National Party's stench hanging over any Democrat candidate. Border issues, inflation, the supply chain, the Afghanistan exit, a nationwide vaccine mandate. What is there to like? Maybe I should be glass half full about the predicament. Democrats will not learn from their Virginia fiasco. They will continue with an overreaching style of government that ignores Americans' middle. And combine that with the incompetence that has been the Biden-Kamala Harris White House, and we are on the verge of a political train wreck for the ages. The House and Senate will flip in 2022. When that happens, would it surprise anyone if Nancy Pelosi retires and Biden states he will not seek re-election in 2024? In that scenario, America will see the Democratic Party's future lies with Pete Buttigieg, of all people, the same person who sits over the supply chain debacle. That scenario speaks volumes to the lack of a bench that the Democratic Party has. Yes, it's time for Democrats to hit the panic button. They have become exposed as the party so against President Trump that they didn't have a plan for a post-Trump world. The cable networks that have carried the political left's water long for a Trump-like villain so much because they can't inspire their own watchers with what is taking place in Washington. Because all politics are local, we remind all Midlanders that the first day of a candidate to file to be on the ballot in a Republican or Democratic Party ballot is Monday. Republicans are lined up. What will we see on the Democratic Party side? Anyone for County Commissioner Precincts 2 or 4? What about County Judge? Is State Senate too much to ask? How about Congress? Is this the year the local Democratic Party builds itself beyond Precinct 3 in Midland? That's a good question. Of course, maybe the better question, based on what's happening nationally and how uninspiring the far left has been, is how could local Democrats win in Midland and across the region beyond that one precinct because of what is happening at the national level? Billy J. Weir passed from this life on November 8th in Hearst, Texas. Graveside services will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park at 1 p.m. on Saturday, November 13th. Charles F. Charlie Aycock passed away on November 9th, following a lengthy illness. A celebration of Charlie's life will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday, November 13th at St. Luke's United Methodist Church in Midland. Memorials may be made to the Texas Boys Ranch in Lubbock, the Texas Bar Foundation, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Donald Richard Chambers passed away on November 9th. He requested to be cremated. A memorial celebration will be at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, November 16th at First Christian Church. All are welcome. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Eddie Booty O'Gean of Midland entered into eternal rest on Thursday, November 4th. Family and friends are invited to attend a Celebration of Life Memorial on Sunday, November 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Memorial service is under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Cody Allen Martindale of Midland passed away November 8th. The family will receive guests on Friday, November 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Greenwood Baptist Church. Funeral service will be on Saturday, November 13th at 9:30 a.m. at Greenwood Baptist Church. Burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Van Hollis Percy of Midland passed away on Saturday, November 6th in Fort Worth. His family will receive friends on Friday, November 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Branch at Nally Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 13th at St. Anne's Church. Sammy Galinda Roca Big Roach, age 46, passed away on November 5th. A memorial service will be held on Friday, November 12th at 10 a.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Sandra K. Hyde of Midland passed away on Friday, November 5th. A memorial service will be held on Monday, November 15th at 3 p.m. at Christ Church Anglican in Midland.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read from the Odessa American, Friday, November 12th. Quick hits. Church offering vaccines. Connection Christian Church, in partnership with Sunflower Pharmacy, will offer a free vaccine clinic for kids and adults from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday at 4241 Tanglewood Lane. Pfizer and Moderna shots will be offered for free. Ages 5 and up are eligible. The flu shot will also be available. Bring your vaccine card if you are receiving a booster. Enter at the north entrance by the Jackrabbit. WTX Manifest Aiming for a Festival Scene by Royal McGregor. Planmasters GPS President Oscar Aguilar on Thursday morning said a new music festival is coming to West Texas that entertainers for the event will be announced tonight. The three-day music festival is scheduled in 2022. Aguilar said the festival, which will be called WTX Manifest, can reach the level of Coachella or Lollapalooza. Aguilar said the festival can draw between 35,000 and 45,000 attendees per day. We want to put a major music festival that is recognized at a national level in our backyard, Aguilar said. We want something that West Texas can be proud of. During tonight's launch party at Dos Amigos, WTX Manifest is scheduled to hold its first public announcement. There will be a promotional video, and the festival will go live with all of its social media platforms and website. Aguilar said the location and time of the festival will also be announced during the launch party. Anyone wanting to attend the launch party can purchase tickets at tinyurl.com/X7N4TNPX. There will be camping. There will be glamping. There will be RV parks, he said. There will be more details at our launch party as far as location and how to get there and what services will be provided to make it appealing for people. Though he didn't go into depth about who would be performing at WTX Manifest, Aguilar said the festival will have 30 bands from various genres, including rock, country, hip-hop, Latin, pop, and alternative. Aguilar said the festival is working with the same booking agent that puts together Austin City Limits. He said there's plenty of ambition to make this festival successful. For our first event, it's ambitious, but it's within our reach, he said. The West Texas people are ready for an event like this. In the wake of the Astro World Festival that left 9 people dead and hundreds of others injured, Aguilar said safety for WTX Manifest will be a top priority. He said security companies will be there, and there will also be EMS stationed around the venue. We want our attendees to feel that security presence, so they know when they are walking in there that they are going to be okay, Aguilar said. We will have professionals that will look at our festival layout and ensure that we will have EMT services available and exit strategies if there's an influx of people. If there's any sort of crowding issue, we will have emergency plans to manage those. Odessa American Opinion Page, Friday, November 12th. Texas View. In America, we don't ban ideas, we challenge them. The Point. Banning books is yet another misguided tool for Abbott's reelection campaign. Not to cast aspersions on the academic accomplishments of State Representative Matt Krause, San Diego Christian College, 2003, or Governor Greg Abbott, UT Austin, 1981, but their book banning inclinations of late would suggest that they either ditched a class, dozed off during a lecture, or simply have chosen to ignore a vital lesson from history. Surely the two Republicans were exposed in college to the uncomfortable fact that in a free society, anyone suggesting the need to winnow out books they find disagreeable is venturing into dangerous territory. Surely they realize that crusades to ban or censor books, particularly on ideological grounds, inevitably go too far, sometimes over yonder to say, fascism or communism. Krause, a history and social studies major with a law degree from Liberty University, got this latest effort started recently when he announced he was conducting an investigation into the types of books Texas school districts make available to their students. The Fort Worth lawmaker is chair of the House General Investigating Committee and one of the founders of the hyper-conservative Texas Freedom Caucus. He explained in a letter to Texas school districts that he was particularly interested in books that address issues of race or sexuality or make students feel guilt, anguish, or any other form of psychological distress because of their race or sex. That's language he borrowed from recent House legislation. Included with Krause's letter was a 16-page list of about 850 book titles. He directed the school districts, by November 12th, to tell him whether they have any of the books on his list, how many copies, and how much they spent acquiring them. He wouldn't say where he came up with his list or what he would do if any of these offending titles showed up on school library bookshelves or on class reading lists. Among the better-known titles on Krause's blacklist of sorts are William Styron's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Confessions of Nat Turner, the acclaimed Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, and Caste, The Origins of Our Discontents by the esteemed writer Isabel Wilkerson. All three books are likely to make readers feel distressed and also enlightened, as good books tend to do. Did we mention that Krause is running for Attorney General? Running in the Republican Party against two better-known candidates, Land Commissioner George P. Bush and former State Supreme Court Justice Eva Guzman, this self-described faithful conservative fighter for Texas desperately needed an issue, and now he has one. Candidate Abbott, never one to pass up a potent culture war issue of his own, chimed in. The governor, running for a third term and possibly beyond, reminds us of a Galleria visitor who simply cannot resist the in-your-face importuning of kiosk clerks, hawking cell phones, cosmetics, or the latest energy booster. Now that he's worked to make guns available even to the folks who can't shoot straight, make it more difficult for his fellow Texans to vote, censor discussions of race in classrooms, ban transgender youth from sports, throw sand in the gears of desperately needed plans to contain a deadly pandemic, and push through the most restrictive anti-abortion law in the nation, Abbott has to have yet another campaign cudgel. Banning books will do just fine. In addition to being nakedly obvious about his motives, Abbott was embarrassingly inept. He asked the Texas Association of School Boards, TASB, TASB, recently to determine the extent to which pornography or other inappropriate content exists in public schools across the state and to remove it if they found it. A growing number of parents of Texas students are becoming increasingly alarmed about some of the books and other content found in public school libraries that are extremely inappropriate, Abbott wrote to Dan Troxell, TASB's executive director, without giving examples. Abbott said the group had an obligation to act, which the TASB found confusing. As it noted, it has no regulatory authority over school districts and does not set the standards for instructional materials. Opinion column by the Houston Chronicle.
United Supermarkets kick off Turkey Bucks fundraiser. On Wednesday, United Supermarkets and Market Street launched their annual program, Turkey Bucks, in Midland, Odessa, San Angelo, and parts of New Mexico. Turkey Bucks is a program that is designed to help raise money for those dealing with food insecurity as the holiday season approaches. From now until November 24th, guests at United Supermarkets will have the opportunity to make a donation at the register after they are finished shopping. The donations will go to several food banks and other charitable organizations across the region. This includes the West Texas Food Bank, the Food Depot, St. James Episcopal, Storehouse, New Mexico, El Ranchito, New Mexico, Food Bank of Eastern New Mexico, and Food Bank of the Concho Valley. The money raised in a particular area will stay in that area. Walker named new CRMWD General Manager. The Colorado River Municipal Water District's Board of Directors announced Thursday that they have named Cole Walker as the district's next General Manager. Walker will begin serving in his new role on December 1st. He will succeed John Grant, who has led the district since 1995. Quote, after a comprehensive search and interview process that took several months, we are pleased to have unanimously agreed on Cole Walker as the next general manager of CRMWD, end quote, Board President Mickey Jones said in a news release. A native of Big Spring, Walker is a professional engineer and holds a bachelor's degree in civil engineering from Texas Tech University, as well as a Master of Business Administration degree from the University of Texas Permian Basin. He most recently served as CRMWD's Assistant General Manager, overseeing the district's operations and engineering divisions. Walker will be the fourth General Manager of CRMWD since its establishment by the Texas Legislature in 1949. He joined CRMWD in 2006 and will be responsible for managing a complex water transmission system with a staff of 88 people and an annual operating budget of $40 million. I am honored to have been selected to serve as CRMWD's next general manager, end quote, Walker said in the release. Quote, I want to thank the board of directors for the trust and confidence they have placed in me to lead the district. I am excited to build on our past success and continue to serve the water needs of our region, end quote. CRMWD provides wholesale raw water to its member cities of Big Spring, Odessa, and Snyder, as well as six additional municipal customers. The district serves more than 600,000 people in a service area that includes 36 counties, as well as serving 3 industrial, 7 mining, and approximately 300 rural water customers. Local and state news roundup. Man gets 37 years for murdering transgender woman. Dallas. A Texas man who strangled a transgender woman to death and dumped her body in a lake in 2019 was sentenced Thursday to 37 years in prison. A Dallas County jury sentenced Ruben Alvarado, 24, of Mesquite, a day after finding him guilty of first-degree murder in the death of Chanel Lindsay, 26, in June 2019. Alvarado told jurors that he had taken the Dallas woman to White Rock Lake for sex, but ordered her from his sport utility vehicle upon discovering her biological sex. He claimed that Lindsay then attacked him, so he strangled her with his belt in self-defense and dumped her weighted body in the lake. Prosecutors had asked for a 60-year prison term. Alvarado could have gotten between 5 years to life in prison. Lindsay's death had marked the second killing of a transgender woman in Dallas in less than a month. In a separate case, Kendrell LeVar Lyles, 36, remained jailed while awaiting trial on murder charges in the deaths of three women in Dallas, including 23-year-old transgender woman Malaysia Booker in May 2019. It wasn't clear Thursday if Lyles has an attorney. Death penalty sought for man linked to 19 deaths. Prosecutors have served notice that they'll seek the death penalty for a Dallas man linked to 19 deaths. In court papers filed this week, Dallas County prosecutors say they'll seek the ultimate penalty if jurors find Billy Chemirmir guilty of capital murder. Chemirmir is from Kenya and is a permanent U.S. resident. He has been in custody since March 2018 and is charged in the deaths of 12 women. Two victims were residents of the Tradition Prestonwood, an independent living facility in Dallas. Separate lawsuits have been filed alleging there were seven other victims at the Tradition. Police have said Chemirmir posed as a maintenance worker or health care provider and stole jewelry and other valuables from his victims. His attorney has said Chemirmir maintains he's innocent. Man convicted of child exploitation offenses. A press release detailed a federal jury convicted a 52-year-old Midland man on Wednesday for multiple child exploitation offenses involving an 11-year-old child. Court documents and evidence presented at trial reportedly detailed that Martin Renteria, 52, of Midland, enticed an 11-year-old into engaging in sexual acts on multiple occasions. Renteria was convicted of production of child pornography, sex trafficking of a child, possession of child pornography, and committing a new crime against a child while registered as a sex offender, the press release stated. He is scheduled to be sentenced on February 11, 2022, and faces a mandatory minimum of 15 years and maximum penalty of life in prison. A federal district court judge will determine any sentence after considering the U.S. sentencing guidelines and other statutory factors. Renteria purchased expensive gifts for the child in exchange for the sexual acts, the press release stated. On at least one occasion, he also recorded a video of one of the sexual acts. Court documents and evidence presented at trial showed that Renteria had committed similar crimes in the past. Trial attorneys Alicia A. Bove and Austin M. Berry of the Criminal Division's Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section and Assistant U.S. Attorney Monica L. Daniels of the Western District of Texas are prosecuting the case. The Midland Police Department investigated the case with computer forensics assistance from the Justice Department's High Technology Investigative Unit. Man charged with trafficking. Alpine. A Las Cruces man was reportedly arrested Tuesday in Brewster County in connection to human trafficking of more than 60 people. According to court documents, Javier Duarte, 22, was driving a box truck through the Highway 118 checkpoint when U.S. Border Patrol agents referred him to secondary inspection. Agents found 67 people concealed in the truck. There were reportedly four of the individuals who were minors, ranging from 8 to 13 years old. In addition, three of the individuals were found to have prior aggravated felonies. Duarte is charged by a criminal complaint with one count of transportation of aliens and one count of aiding or assisting aliens to enter the U.S. who were previously convicted of an aggravated felony, the press release stated. If convicted, Duarte faces a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison on both counts. A federal district court judge will determine any sentence after considering the U.S. sentencing guidelines and other statutory factors. U.S. Attorney Ashley C. Hoff of the Western District of Texas, Homeland Security Investigations Acting Special Agent in Charge, Takuk Cho, and Big Bend Sector Chief Patrol Agent Sean McGoffin made the announcement. HSI and U.S. Border Patrol are investigating the case. Assistant U.S. Attorneys Lance Kennedy and Kevin Eaton are prosecuting the case. Andrews man dies in two-vehicle collision. A 26-year-old Andrews man reportedly died in a two-vehicle collision near Goldsmith. The fatal collision happened at 9:37 a.m. November 8th on Farm to Market Road 181, 4 miles east of Goldsmith, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release detailed. Matthew Allen LaRue, 26, of Andrews, was reportedly driving a 2011 Cadillac CTS, while Roberto Tuarek, 41, of Odessa, was driving a 2011 Freightliner truck tractor. The Cadillac was traveling south on Farm to Market Road 181 as the Freightliner and a towed unit was traveling north, the press release stated. The Cadillac drove into the northbound lane and collided with the Freightliner. LaRue was pronounced dead by medical examiner Robin Wood, the press release detailed. Tuareg had no injuries. LaRue and Tuareg were both wearing their seatbelts. Obituaries. Cody Allen Martindale, Midland. Cody Allen Martindale, 27, of Midland, passed away November 8, 2021. The family will receive guests on Friday, November 12, 2021, from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. at Greenwood Baptist Church. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, November 13, 2021, at 9:30 a.m. at Greenwood Baptist Church. Burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park. He is survived by his parents, Jimmy and Tanya Martindale, his loving sister, Casey Martindale, his granddad, Russell Gunter, his grandmother, Shalon Lindeberg, his uncle, Rusty Gunter, and wife, Sarah, Aunt Tiffany Gunter, Adair and husband, Jeremy, Aunt Mary Martindale, Bolton and husband, Jeff, great uncles and aunts, Cindy and husband, Johnny Walker, Danny Gibson, Rick Gibson and wife, Christy, Mark Gibson, Chris Gibson and wife, Sharon, Betty Reynolds and cousins by the dozens, and Russell's companion, Lori Ripley. He was preceded in death by his Nana, Charlotte Gunter, his great-grandparents, Willard and Charlene Gunter, and Roy and Mary Gibson, Aunt Diana Martindale, great-aunt Ruth Worthy, and brother-slash-partner-in-crime, Sam Wolfe. Pallbearers include Joe Crow, Colt Snell, Jacob Armitage, Jerry Garcia, Zach Martin, Tanner McCracken, Lane Flowers, Paul Hurley, Seth Daniel, Nick Walker, Fisher Walker, John Lobau, Ryan Garcia, Austin Tavares, Rodrigo Roddy Landeros, Colton Willett, Chandler Smith, and Michael Hungry Wynn. Cody considered each of these young men as brothers. Honorary pallbearers are Sam Wolfe, Aaron Norris, Dylan Collier, and Christian Bruton. In lieu of flowers, please consider directing any and all donations to either Team Luke Hope for Minds, https://cody.givesmart.com/, or Faith Hope Love Foundation, https://www.fhlcarlsbad.org/. As both are very near and dear to our hearts. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Frank Edison Lassiter, Jr. Ira Ann. Frank Edison Lassiter, Jr., 71, of Sheffield, Texas, a faithful servant of his Lord Jesus Christ, passed away on November 8, 2021. Frank was born in Pecos, Texas, on September 15, 1950, to Frank Edison Lassiter, Sr. and Lila Lynette Lassiter. Frank was married to Jamie Lee Lassiter on May 7, 2005. They were married for 16 and a half years. He is survived by his wife, Lee Lassiter, daughters Rebecca Jeffrey Bunger, Amanda Joe LaPuma, Abby McCullen, and Stacy Butch Ebby. Also brothers Ed, Brenda Lassiter, Roger, Deborah Lassiter, and Andy, Karen Lassiter. He is also survived by 16 grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. Frank is preceded in death by his parents and his first wife, Beatrice Lassiter. Pallbearers are Ed Lassiter, Roger Lassiter, Andy Lassiter, David Bunger, Blake Bunger, and Colton Bunger. Honorary pallbearers are Roger Mills Lassiter, Douglas Wayne Lassiter, Colin Beale, Bill Sparkman, and Frank Johnson. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you to consider making a memorial donation in Frank's honor to World Harvest Baptist Missions, Willow Park Baptist Church, 129 South Ranch House Road, Aledo, Texas, 76008. Telephone 817-441-1596, J. McGuey. The family of Frank Lassiter wishes to thank doctors and staff at West Texas Oncology, Medical Center Hospital staff, and RN Adrian Tavares. Green pastures, sunny skies, Jesus is Lord. Services will be held Monday, 11-15, 2021, at the Kelview Heights Baptist Church, 402 West Scarborough Drive, Midland, Texas, 79705, at 1 p.m. Burial will follow immediately after the service at Rest Haven Memorial Gardens. Doris Marceline Andrews Golden, Gardendale, Texas. Doris Marceline Andrews Golden, 91, passed away November 9, 2021, in Gardendale, Texas, at the home of her daughter, Nava Brown. Doris was born May 28, 1930, to Edgar and Bertha Andrews in Hyman, Texas. Doris is preceded in death by her husband, two sons, Terry Golden and Richard Golden, three grandsons, Michael Golden, Sammy Terry, and Jared Clement, her parents, two brothers, Charles and Gwen Andrews, and two sisters, Wanda Cooper and Juanita Browning. Doris is survived by two daughters, Linda Cooper and husband Ronnie of Thayer, M.O., Nava Brown and husband Tom of Gardendale, Texas, one son, Keith Golden and wife Natalie of Odessa, daughter-in-law Paula Golden of Weatherford, Texas, 11 grandchildren and 19 great-grandchildren, and four great-great-grandchildren. Visitation will be Frank Wilson Funeral Directors from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday, November 14, 2021. Funeral services will be at the Northside Baptist Church at 1 p.m. on Monday, November 15, 2021. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Garden. Death notices. Mary Cruz Dominguez, Midland. Mary Cruz Dominguez, 60, died Thursday, November 4, 2021 in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage, Obits of Midland. Tyron Evans, Odessa. Tyron Evans, 31, died Thursday, November 4, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage, Obits of Midland. Joseph Richard Laura, Odessa. Joseph Richard Laura, 69, of Odessa, Texas, died Tuesday, November 9, 2021 in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m., November 13, 2021 at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at a later date. Pastor Matt Wilson is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Herbert Mueller, Midland. Herbert Mueller, 76, died Sunday, November 7, 2021 in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage, Obits of Midland. Curtis Robinson, Odessa. Curtis Robinson, 79, died Sunday, November 7, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage, Obits of Midland. Donald Thompson, Midland. Donald Thompson, 86, died Wednesday, November 3, 2021 in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage, Obits of Midland.
Branding ideas every small business should consider. Better Business Bureau, Heather Massey writes, when it comes to branding, simply creating a logo or slogan is not enough. Branding is a strategic, long-term approach that helps small businesses achieve success. If you haven't prioritized your branding yet, the following branding tips for small businesses will help you get started. Before diving into these tips, however, consider how vital branding for a small business is. Why branding matters. Did you know that it takes approximately 5 to 7 impressions before someone will remember your brand? That means a potential customer or client must see your logo, name, or brand nearly half a dozen times before it will stick in their mind. By maintaining a clear and consistent brand, potential customers and clients can mentally connect a business with the services they offer, allowing them to quickly recall the name of your business when they have a need it can provide. Branding goes beyond a memorable name or catchy tune. Color schemes, voice, tone, personality, logo, customer service, and many other business ownership aspects combine to create a business's brand. Consistency is key to building and maintaining a strong brand awareness among potential customers, and a strong branding strategy can elevate a business to its next level. Branding idea every small business should consider. If you're a small business owner, now is the time to focus on your branding. Many small businesses with an excellent reputation for quality products or services may become stuck in the middle of success if they fail to dedicate time to form a strong brand identity. To avoid this common pitfall, consider the following tips provided by your Better Business Bureau. Know your competition. Before building a brand that stands out from the crowd, know who is competing against you. Conducting a competitor analysis is an excellent way to see what other businesses in your industry are doing, so you know how to differentiate yourself and compare the attention of potential customers by making a unique impression. Be realistic in your analysis. Most small businesses are not competing with large national corporations, but with other small business owners in their area that possess the same resources and offer similar services. Be uniquely you. Once you understand who your competition is, start defining who you are and how you are different from the rest. Be yourself and not something or someone else. Chances are it will ultimately backfire. Your brand reflects who you truly are, and your customers will be as confident in your products and services as you are if you remain open, transparent, and honest in your messaging. Invest in visual identity. Visual identity encompasses everything, from the brand logo to the colors throughout your website. It's also the first impression your brand will make on potential customers. If you want to build a brand that stands out, then create a brand identity that's unique to you. Make sure the logo, colors, and other visual elements reflect your business's values. Remember that ornate or complicated logos may also increase the price of branded merchandise, or may not transfer well to particular products your customers may be interested in purchasing. Carefully define your brand's mission and values. Your brand's mission is the why behind your business, and the brand's values are the principles you live by. They're the reason you're in business. Clearly defining these two essential aspects and sharing them with your customers will set your business apart and build loyalty. Business owners should state their mission within a sentence or two. With a general idea, it can be spoken out loud within a single breath during a conversation. Identify the ideal customer. Remember, you don't need to be all things to all people. Instead, focus on your specialty and build a strong reputation in that space. It is best to target customers interested in your services or goods, not just everyone in your community. To target them effectively, work towards identifying and understanding who they are, what values are important to them, and their shopping habits. Create a consistent brand voice. The brand's voice should be consistent throughout the website, social media pages, and other marketing materials. As a small business, it is a good idea to focus on your locality, professionalism, and trustworthiness, and consider what makes your business different from your competitors. Above all, your voice should be authentic and genuine and reflect your business's mission and values. Stand for something. Your brand should stand for something such as a charitable cause or a specific movement, reflecting who you are and what you represent. This stance should directly correlate with your brand mission and values, and it will give customers a reason to do business with you. Stand by your word. Your brand is a promise to your customers. If you fail to follow through with the promises you make to your customers through brand messaging, you'll lose business and harm your reputation. Make sure that your brand is authentic and that you honor your promises. Don't be afraid to be different. Market and customer needs change with the times, and there is no better example of this other than the disruption caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Think about how your brand can adapt to changes in the market and how to accommodate customer needs. If you're unwilling to change, it becomes more of a challenge to stay ahead of your competition. The best brands are constantly evolving and looking for new ways to keep a competitive edge. For more business tips, visit bbb.org/small business.
Embarrassed by incontinence? Dear Dr. Roach, I am a woman in my late 80s and have been healthy my whole life. I don't take any medications for any conditions. However, I have one issue I would like to ask your advice on. Over the past few years, I'm afraid I've become incontinent. When I feel the urge, I have to go to the bathroom right away or I might have an accident, which is a great source of distress and embarrassment. Often I don't get to the bathroom in time. I wear pads, but this really isn't a solution. I have heard there are prescription medications available, but I'm not sure if they actually work and whether there are side effects. Do you think it's worth giving them a try? IRM. Answer. Many women are embarrassed about bringing this up to their doctor, but treatment can improve a woman's quality of life and eliminate skin irritation that sometimes comes with incontinence. Overactive bladder is a major cause of incontinence. The most significant symptom is urinary urgency, the sensation of needing to urinate immediately. This often leads to involuntary loss of urine very quickly. The diagnosis can usually be made by a careful assessment of your medical history. A urine culture is performed to be sure there is not an infection, which can lead to these symptoms if not treated. Pads are necessary while the evaluation is in process, as these can wick moisture away from the skin and offer protection from irritation. However, many or most women are able to find relief through treatment, greatly reducing or eliminating the need for pads. These treatments include pelvic floor exercises, lifestyle changes, and sometimes medication. I have had good success referring women to a pelvic floor physical therapist. I am fortunate to have these highly skilled professionals readily available at my practice, but they are not available in many areas. When not, written and verbal instructions must suffice, and an example of these may be found readily on the web or at my Facebook page, facebook.com/KeithRoachMD. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Man's house has become drug users' safe space. Dear Abby, I have an acquaintance I've known for 10 years. He is homeless and a heroin addict. His addiction has gotten worse over the last year, and it is really bad now. He shows up at my home at all times of the night, sleeps on my porch, and leaves wet, dirty clothes behind. He comes over high on heroin, nods out, and acts very strange. I feed him, let him shower, and even buy him clothes from the resale shops, but I need all this to stop. He continually needs something, money for cigarettes, a ride to here or there, clothes. I'm 65 years old, semi-retired man, and I do not want or need a homeless heroin addict in my life in my remaining days on this planet. I've tried repeatedly to end this friendship, and he doesn't have anyone. But when I tell him to leave me alone, he breaks down and cries. It breaks my heart. When we first met, he was a happy, friendly, handsome person. But now it's horrible. He's sickly and looks bad. I have even considered selling my home and moving. What can I do finally to get rid of this guy for good? Signed, Desperate in Florida. Dear Desperate, by now you should have realized that you can't fix what's wrong with this person. In fact, you have become his enabler. Tell him you have done everything you can, but it hasn't helped him straighten his life around. Offer to help him find a drug rehab program. Then tell him that until he demonstrates a willingness to help himself, you do not want to see him again. If he shows up stoned after that, rather than give him showers, money, and clothing, call the police and have him removed from your property. Dear Abby, 2 months ago I started dating a man I'll call Hugh after a mutual friend of a friend introduced us. He is retired and I still work. Hugh is very sociable and friendly and drinks much more than I do. His friends are great. One particular single friend, Terry, is my age, and we have similar interests. I haven't been intimate with Hugh because I'm not particularly attracted to him. I also don't think Hugh is all that interested because we don't get together too often, although he calls daily for a minute or two to check in. He wants a relationship, but I don't feel it. I'm starting to think Hugh is looking more for a friend with benefits. I would prefer to remain just friends. I also want to be able to further a relationship with Terry, who has a lot more in common with me. How do I do it tactfully? Hugh has been nice to me, but like I said, I feel no romantic connection. I also don't want to string him along. Signed, Keeping Options Open. Dear Keeping, tell Hugh you like him and hope you will always be friends, but just friends. Let him know you see others and hope that he does too. Throw a party and invite a group of friends, including Terry. If Terry shows any interest in you, respond accordingly. Then, cross your fingers.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.